Come on, Travis, tell me what you know.
I don't know anything.
You don't know anything?
I do know that I wish sealed events happened.
Do you miss the arena? Because I pretty much have a sealed event at least once every 2 months, at least.
Yeah, like I definitely miss the variety that went on at the arena when it came to F&M's. Because here it's just
standard or modern every week.
Yeah, standard or modern every week. And F&M, you know, the one immediately following the release, so really the night of the release is a draft. But other than that, it's all standard or modern.
Yeah.
And then Saturdays has been, I'm working. Yeah. You know, the variety of events.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's nice. Like, for example, today, I just wasn't in the mood to sit there and play old standard. Right? Because normally on Tuesdays I draft. And by the way, for those of you listening, today is January 19th. So, which would make it Tuesday, which means I would normally play Magic Online today. But normally what I do is I build the different budget decks for standard, because I like standard and I like playing standard, and I can't afford to play real decks because I'm poor. And I just really didn't feel like sitting down and brewing up something budget standard with all, you know, it really doesn't matter this week or next week or whenever until Magic Online gets updated, because none of these, you know, without the next set, none of those cards really matter that much. So it was kind of an ordeal where I was just like, nah, it's fine, whatever.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I don't know. I like having the variety of formats. I like drafting, obviously. I like playing sealed. I love two-headed giant. We did do a two-headed giant the Sunday night. Which was kind of fun. We'll get into that later. But, you know, I was trying to talk people into two-headed giant drafts, and people were like, no. So, but we had enough people that were kind of interested that maybe in the future I can turn that into a thing around here. I don't know. I love a variety in my Magic, so. It's more another one of those reasons that I miss you being around, because you're one of the people who could get people excited to play new formats or formats that other people don't play very often. So now that you're gone, it's everyone's kind of back to the modern every weekend and the standard for the big tournaments and stuff. And kind of want to get people going on about other formats. Somebody did want to do a, what is it called? A unified team event, I think is what it's called. Where you build three decks, but everyone shares the card pool. Oh. And you play three-man teams.
Oh, okay. Yeah, kind of what they do in the like, big events, like Pro Tour events or whatever, for, like, team draft and stuff like that.
Well, team draft is different because team draft, obviously, you're drafting from the pool. They did one for, I think, this last Worlds.
Okay.
But basically, you know, you pick a format like standard, and then you build three different decks for your team, you know, an ABC deck.
Oh, okay.
And then that pool is shared across all the players. It's kind of like the same thing that Two-Headed Giant is, where you build two decks from the same pool, but it's like the whole standard pool or the whole whatever, so I'd like to do that. I just don't know if I have enough people who are interested in taking the time to build decks of that caliber. But you know what? This isn't a podcast about Magic community organizing, right? We're supposed to be talking about trolling people.
Right.
And doing things. So today's show is called Urbu. No, you're Urable. I don't know. It sounded good when I typed it. Where you have a particular strategy on how you build your sealed deck, so we're going to get into that. We're going to get into how we did this particular weekend and what we think we've learned from this particular format of being sealed, and what, you know, now that we've played with the cards a little bit, what's going on. So, Travis, how did you do? You told me that you played one event.
Right, I did one sealed event. It was a midnight pre-release, and I took first, going 3-0.
Okay, so it was kind of a little one.
Yeah, it was a little one because nobody really wanted to be there until 5 in the morning.
Sure.
So everyone just kind of voted, and we all just kind of agreed, you know what, 3-0 is fine. And
3 rounds, 4 rounds, like we do 4 rounds.
Yeah. Well, and then they did the 3 rounds, and every round was a pack round. So The winner got a pack just for playing that round.
I like
round.
That. Right? I like doing that. That's what we do as well.
And then we just based who got first off of tiebreakers and everything.
So not too bad. I got to see your deck, and if I think the picture's pretty good, I will post it up on the website, samusgrobo.com. But, I don't know, did you like the format? Did you think it was good? I mean, we'll get into it in more depth in a little bit, but from your quick, from the hip kind of shot, do you like this format, this sealed format? Does it seem solid?
I really do. I like the sealed format. It gives you a really wide variety of things that you can do, especially with the Surge. Surge abilities got me so far in the sealed event. And I don't know if it was just because it's an overall good ability or mechanic, or if it's just something that is just powered strictly for sealed or team events. I'm not entirely sure yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I judged the midnight release, and I got home around 5:30, playing 4 rounds. We had, I think every round went to time and then some. So it was kind of a long one. But got a few hours of sleep, came back, judged/played. I mean, I mostly played. I did do like the last 2 rounds of judging on Saturday, so the other guy could go home. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't do so great. I think I ended up 3-1 on Saturday, and then Sunday I played and judged, but we didn't have as many people. I think we only had 16 or 17 people. Or 18 people, I think, on Sunday. So it wasn't such a big deal. Most of the questions had already been asked and answered. So I think I only had like one or two judge questions that I had to worry about. And I went 2-2. It should have been 2-1-1, but I wasn't going to give somebody, or I wasn't going to draw when we went to time because of slow play. And my opponent wasn't going to scoop to me, so I conceded to them so we could give the pack away. I feel like it's better for the store to keep the pack because on a draw, the store doesn't give a pack away. We only give a pack away on a match win. But in my opinion, it was sporty to give the guy a pack, so I gave him the pack. And then we did a two-headed giant, my son and I, and we went 2-1. We only had 3 rounds. It was kind of smaller. We had the 6 teams, essentially, that you needed to make a two-headed giant fire. And it was a lot of fun. But I had the same problem all weekend long. And I complained about it online and to Travis. But essentially, I was either running 17 lands and like one or two of the different guys who produce colorless mana. Like the 1 or the 0/1 for 2 that taps for a colorless, or in one case I had one of those and the artifact that tapped to produce mana in Scryde, or I had one. I think I had the four for five that makes two colorless mana and something else. In that deck, I think I ran 18 lands. I just kept getting in this situation where I would draw, I'd have a reasonable keep, and then just flood out and never see another card that wasn't a land, basically. Or I'd get in situations where I would mulligan, maybe mulligan again, scry a non-land to the bottom, keep like two lands and three spells, is what I did against one opponent on Sunday, and basically just never play a game of Magic. And that particular match, I just didn't play a game of Magic at all against this opponent. So I was, as the weekend went on, granted I was tired, I was crabby, you know, I was doing my best to not let it show externally because I was trying to be the judge, you know, or I wasn't trying to be the judge, I was often the judge. So I was staying positive and making sure that I answered everyone's questions to the best of my abilities and stuff. But inside I was just like, this is so bullshit. I'm not even playing like half of these games, it seems like, because this format in particular for some reason was just, it was as bad if not worse than Magic Online Shuffler. And everyone knows how I feel about the Magic Online Shuffler.
You love it to the full ability of anything ever.
Basically. Nope. Yeah, exactly. I think I even said that in one of my posts or Facebook posts or whatever. I even said, well, at least I can't blame the Magic Online Shuffler for this amount of luck today. But that's just what it was like all day. You know, you keep this and you scry three or four cards or whatever, and all you see is lands. Everywhere you go is lands. And I was just, I don't know why in this format in particular, but really was getting to me. But I played Friday Night Magic and I won the draft. So it was a throwbacks, con drafts, con okay. Fate. That was pretty fun. So yeah, I think we're going to keep with that style the weekend of a pre-release or whatever. We'll do a throwback draft to an older, you know, probably still legal, so we have all the, or in print, so we still have access to all the cards easily, but I don't know about everywhere else, but we tend to stop drafting the old format when the new format comes out. I don't know if everyone else is like that or not. I assume so. So it was nice to do a throwback draft and kind of do something a little different that we haven't done in a long time. So we kind of instigated before that you use a different strategy in mind for building your sealed pools. And you're a pretty consistent sealed pool player, at least at pre-releases.
Right.
Where I will admit, it took me a little bit of time to think about it, but I do tend to go closer to this bread format where I consider bombs first. I want to play every card that I feel is powerful, even if that means that I can, that I feel like I can successfully get away with in my mana base. So like this weekend, I primarily played two color decks with splashing for colorless spells in my mind, off of usually, you know, a couple of land or maybe a mana creature, an artifact or something. The 3-in-1 day, I did actually splash another color. I was heavily colorless, I was heavily devoid, and I had the two lands, I think, that fixed for a color, one that fixed for a color if it was for a devoid spell, and one that fixed for a color if you also tapped a creature. So I didn't feel it was too bad to do so, and I only splashed for one spell, and that one spell was, what's the 3-1 from the last set? That whenever you play a colorless spell, it untaps. Nettle Sentinel, maybe? Nettle Drone, maybe?
I think maybe Drone.
Maybe Nettle Drone. So I splashed for it because I think out of my 23 spells, other than I think I only had two spells that were not colorless. So I thought the sheer value I was getting for potentially having that guy sit in my hand for a couple of turns was pretty outrageously
right.
good.
Okay.
So, and to be fair, he when he did come down, he did a lot of work. So I felt like he was worth it. I don't think he was ever stuck in my hand. So it was pretty good. The match, or the round that I actually lost... No, I went 2-2 that day. I flooded out, like I said, and didn't play the decisive game 3. And then I played against my son in round 3. And he played Gideon on turn 4, all 3 games.
That was nice.
I was able to deal with it. I was able to deal with it game 1. Thanks to having a negate in my hand, but not games 2 and 3. So, I don't know. Anyway, back to bombs, then removal, efficient spells, aggressive creatures, and then junk cards or dreads. So that's the bread method. That's, I guess I do follow this relatively closely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid, you know, strategy that, from what I see, the large majority of players use.
Yeah, it really does, in my mind, come down to just playing your strongest spells. And that, I think, is what typically ends up happening with the with this bread method. Is if you play every bomb, you play all your removal, then you're usually pretty close to being out of cards.
Right.
You glue in one or two evasion creatures that maybe are not really bombsy, and... You're in pretty solid place. But you have what you're calling Urdu.
Yeah, I mean, that totally flows way better than bread.
Right. Urdu.
I guess the E could be, you know, replaced or, you know.
That's a pleasant sound.
People keep calling me. So I just ignore it from my phone.
That's right. Out the window.
Yeah, the E, you know, Urbu, it could be E or A for the first one. The E is for evasion or aggro. It doesn't really matter. It's basically more what you get out of your pool.
So you're saying evasion, aggro?
Yeah, we could do that.
We can't call it aggro because it doesn't start
with an
E. Yeah,
but E and A are sometimes... have the same sound, so either way, Urbu could be with an A.
Sure.
So yeah.
Sure. We'll call it aggro.
So you get evasion or you get aggro, you know, you look at those ones first. And then you go with the R, which
okay.
is removal, because that is key to any game in, you know, sealed or limited events. You just need to get rid of their threats. That's all there is to it. And this is either, you know, spot removal, counter spells, things like that. Or just even pacifism, you know, cards like that. And then the B is bomb. Take the bombs third, in my opinion, because you can't always get them right away. You know, bombs are the mid to late game things. Unless you have an aggro bomb.
Okay.
And then the U is utility, like cantrips or tempo things. Or, you know, even mana ramp. That's what I view ramp as utility. Because it just fixes everything.
So you would rather play a... let's say a 2-2 flyer for 3 over a, I don't know, Breaker of Worlds, for example.
Yeah, more or less.
If you were to line those two things up, you would say that the 2-3 or the 2-2 flyer for 3 is just better than the Breaker of Worlds.
Yeah, more or less. Because you can get it out early, and then, I mean, with with my setup, yes, I would rather take it that way.
Well, and by take it, I just mean you would play
right.
First.
I would much rather do it that way than, you know, relying on the bombs for you to win. Because in my opinion, okay. You know, a bomb spell is something that you're going to need in the clutch. You know, you just, it's something that you need when you go off of the bread system. With mine, it's more or less, if you get a bomb, great. That's going to help. But it's not necessarily needed, which is why it's...
So let's just hypothetically say that you have two very good bombing cards. Say, like, I don't know. What would you consider a bombing card in this format right now?
Well, for me...
Like a Gideon...
Well, for this, for the weekend,
Gideon's
for this weekend,
I'm looking at Battle for Zendikar stuff, so I can say, oh, yeah, this is
so
a
for
bomb.
This for this weekend. My pool.
Let's go Blight Herder.
No.
Let's go. You don't think that's
a
bomb card?
Like for my pool this weekend, I had.
Okay. Let me look at it again here. But go ahead, keep talking. I'm bringing it.
Four
up.
Cards that I would consider bombs. Well, three cards. Reality Smasher, which that has, it costs five, one of which has to be colorless.
Right.
Trample Haste.
That's
when
Trample
it
Haste.
Becomes one. The target of a spell an opponent controls, it's countered unless they discard a card. Okay,
right.
So that's one of them. The other one was the Akum Firebird. That's the 3-3 Flying Haste Phoenix that has to attack, and it has landfall, pay 6, return it from the graveyard to the battlefield.
Correct.
And then the Pathfinder, which Kozilek's Pathfinder costs 6, it's a 5-5, and it says, tap a colorless target creature, can't block Kozilek's Pathfinder this turn.
Okay, so let's compare that to, say, your Jawaw Isle Avenger, right? Which is a 3-3 flyer for a blue and 4, or you can surge it for a blue
right.
and 2. Okay, so would you rather have, let's say, the Pathfinder, because it's probably the less good bombing
right.
card, right? And run a second Avenger? Like, that's what I'm trying to prioritize here. Would you rather play two of the 3-3 flyer or have the 1-3-3 flyer and the 1-6-6 that makes one thing not be able to block it for a mana?
That would depend on what I had for removal.
Okay.
Like, and that's how I look
so
at it.
So it's situational
yeah.
based.
And that's how I look at
okay.
it. You know, I don't look at it as I need this, 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 and this. It's more... I need this if I have good things in this and this. And that's how I line up. That's how I line it up when I'm building a deck.
See, and I guess normally for me, and I guess I'm going to put this out here, and I don't have a clever little system, but for me, it really comes down to I want to play as many things that I would consider must-answer threats.
Okay.
Right, which is what I basically consider a bomb is a must answer threat, or just like an insane removal spell. From like the last set, the black one, destroy target creature planeswalker with the
Ruinous Path.
Yeah, Ruinous Path. I would say Ruinous Path, in my opinion, would be a bomb. Right, it's a 2-for-1. It's a must answer thing. It's a get out of jail card. Even though it is technically a removal spell. In this particular format, and also, I really liked Goblin Dork Dwellers. He did a lot of work for me this weekend. I put him in the bomb tool. So I tend to go, okay, everything that I consider a bomb, and then whatever I can do to put the synergies up there. And normally that works really, really well for me. It didn't do it this particular weekend. Maybe I misunderstand the format or misunderstand the synergies. But to me, it goes bomb, synergy, removal. And that's typically how I kind of go. I mean, I play all the removal I can in the deck that lets me have the most number of powerful bombs and the most amount of synergy. And then I play every piece of removal that I can in that color combination. I feel like we're a lot closer than... like, I might be in the middle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's this bread, there's your Urbu, and then there's my method in the middle, like bombs and synergy.
See,
and
I think synergy needs to be the thing that you focus on primarily, because, yeah, if you have a bunch of bombs, that's great, but if you have nothing that flows together, then there's really no reason for your bombs to even exist, because it's just kind of, I have this. Okay, and then what? Then here's another
thing. Let's get into a situation that I had this weekend, right? So I was, if you remember from our previous show, one of the cards that I wanted to open the most was Eldrazi Displacer. And I did. I had one in each pool. I felt very lucky for that. So I built a white deck. And then, for some reason, all of my pools that I opened were very heavily ally-based. Okay? You know what? Let me actually stop for 1 second. Eldrazi Displacer, for those of you who don't remember, because this is a brand new card. A white and two for a devoid creature, 3/3, that you can spend colorless and two generic, exile another creature, then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control. So you have a lot of little synergies with this thing. Actually, even more than I originally thought when I looked at it, because it returns it tapped. So you can use it to remove a blocker. You can use it to recycle your own coming into the battlefield triggers. You can save a creature from lethal damage, a removal spell. You can do a lot of stuff with this guy. That being said, I had him down exactly one time out of two decks and eight matches. And that one time he was down, he did much work for me. Every time after that, I never saw him. He just hid in my deck. A card that did a huge amount of work for me that went in the same deck, because I basically had two red-white ally decks, was Goblin Dark Dwellers. Okay, this guy... red, and 3 for a menace, 4/4. When he enters the battlefield, basically you pick a sorcery or instant card that converts a mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard and play it without having to pay its mana cost. And then it gets exiled if you do so. This guy did a huge amount of work for me all weekend long. He came down relatively consistently. Almost all of my removal spells cost 3 or less. That he was able to target. I often sat there with him in my hand waiting for an opportunity to recycle said removal spells. And even one game where I couldn't recycle for a removal spell, I had played the... Is it Warp World that costs 3 or costs a colorless and a generic? And it has 3 different modes of, like, counter a sorcery, make a 1/1, or put a exile a creature with toughness of 1.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Yeah,
Warping Whale, maybe?
Warp World is a completely different red card.
I'm still trying to learn all the name of the cards, too. But at one point, I used that spell to counter a sorcery that was going to make me discard 2 cards and take 2 damage. And then I was able to flash it back and make a 1/1 with the Dark Dwellers to basically give me 5 power, which allowed me to attack and kill my opponent. So he did a lot of work. And then I also had a Reflector Mage in one of the pools that I splashed for. And the Reflector Mage is a blue, a white, and a colorless, or a generic, for a 2/3 human wizard. that bounces a creature when it enters the battlefield, and then your opponent can't replay it. So I wouldn't necessarily, on their own, say any one of these cards by themselves are a bomb.
I think all three of them are utility.
I would agree. I would put them all in the utility. But playing them all together and combining like Dark Dwellers with a removal spell.
Right, that's synergy.
Or right, there's so much synergy that piles in there. And like the synergy with the Displacer plus the Dark Dwellers and the Reflector Mage, it just, when those things did happen to come together, I couldn't lose the game. So to me, that is the most powerful effect in how you can pull these things together. I don't know. I would put that much higher on the list than, say, like any generic bomb. Even though I probably would also say Goblin Dark Dwellers is a bomb. Then I had things like a Breaker of Worlds, which I'd normally put in the bomb category. And I had like a Brood Butcher, I think one game. One match. I don't know. It, one pool. It was very weird. Like, I had this really difficult time trying to make things work in this format, and I'm not sure where I was going wrong the whole time. I really wish I had all my pools sitting in front of me so I could lay them out in front of you so you could see what happened, but it was a mess, and I did not do as well as I would have liked on the,
right,
on the days.
A card that won me actually four of my games, Cinderhellion.
That guy, see, I had one of those in the deck with the Eldrazi Displacer 12. I thought it was great. The extra 2 damage for the 4/4 trample that, you know, gave me an opportunity to spend the 3 mana, blink it out, do an extra 2 points of damage. I played a lot of stuff like that, where they had interesting come-into-play abilities that I could re-trigger with the Eldrazi Displacer.
Right.
And, like I said, except for the one game, that it never came up. I was super disappointed. Speaking of super disappointed, I also had the Jor-El Rune Diver.
What's that one do?
It is a red, a blue, and a generic for a legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard, is a 2/3. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card. I had two.
Wow.
One in each pool. I could not figure out how to get it to work. I could not. I wanted to put it in the deck so bad, but I could not make it happen. And to that effect, I even had a Storm Chaser Mage in one of the two pools, and for those of you who are not familiar, that is the red and a colorless, or a red and a blue for a Flying Haste 1/3 prowess creature, which both of these cards together make me excited in my pants because I'm an Izzet player like nobody's business.
Personally, I think that the legendary dude is going to be great in both Commander and Standard.
He's going to be really, really good in Modern,
right,
as well.
But I'd say
I think this guy's probably going to be an all-format
all-star.
Yeah,
constructed formats.
I agree.
The only way I see him being efficient and limited is if it's draft and you get him pack one, you know, the first pick out of your entire draft, and then you build around him.
Well, keep in mind, he works whenever you cast your second spell each turn, period.
I know.
So any turn you can play two spells, two creatures, a removal spell on a creature, creature and removal spell, whatever. There's a lot of potential in there. I could not see how to make him work into my mana or work into any of my decks, even though I would have loved to see him.
I would have loved to play him in my deck because, well, as you saw, mine was... Is it?
Yeah, it would have just glued right into your deck probably quite well. Let's see. A card that I didn't think was that good, but actually lost me the single two-headed giant game we lost, Spark Mage's Gambit.
So much.
I kind of knew this was a card. Like, sort of, but not really. So, Spark Mage's Gambit is a red and a generic for a sorcery. It deals one damage to each of up to two target creatures. It's that same wording that they have on the support. So, it can do one damage to one creature or one damage to two different creatures, but not two damage to one creature. And then it also says those creatures cannot block this turn. So, we had left back three blockers. We're at 16 life. I attacked with my 3/4 powered flyer. I had the artifact that when I attacked, I made a 1/1 ally that also comes into play tapped and attacking. So I had that, and I attacked, and then I switched to my artifact over to my ground creature that so it could block and kill anything. Well, the opponents were able to cast two of these Smart Mage's Gambits, make Remington and my entire team unable to block, and then proceeded to do exactly 16 damage to us. And I was just like, what? And then I looked over at Remington's board, and he had six lands in play, and two lands in his graveyard where they had turned into 3/3 creatures on their turn, and he just attacked. And then there was one in his hand. And I looked down at my board, and I had three creatures, all of which were in my opening hand. And I had seven lands on the battlefield and one in my hand that I had just drew that turn. And I was like, wow, we just completely flooded out. And I looked over at our opponents, and they both had four lands each or five lands each and basically had drawn nothing but creatures right. And gas. I just looked at Remy, and I'm like, did we just lose because we could not play any creatures? And basically, they had six attackers to our, you know, three blockers, and none of them could block. He's like, yep. I'm like, all right, awesome. The streak continues. So, and that was at the end of the weekend where my saltiness was coming out. But that card is very good. I don't know if it's going to be seen play any place in particular. I would assume so. I assume that this will go in sideboards. Falter effects are usually quite good, and the ability to do one damage in this format I think will also be quite good. There's a lot of one toughness creatures. I don't know. What do you think, Travis?
Based off of the sealed event, I feel that Spark Mage's Gambit was just phenomenal for me. And I think it's going to see heavy play in aggressive decks, in my opinion.
So you think even this card could get main decked in decks that people want to turn sideways?
The way I view it, yeah, I think so.
To, like, push through the final bits of damage?
It's just...
So, like, Jackalpug decks will use something like this, and then... Or let's say the colorless Eldrazi deck.
Okay.
Right? Remember how I was playing against it the other day? Or I was playing... I don't know what I was playing the other day. Oh, I was playing the Goblins deck.
Okay.
All right. I was playing the Goblins deck, and I was doing pretty well with it until I'd run into the colorless Eldrazi deck. And I felt like there's no way I could punch through that the Eldrazi that's star 5 with the Goblins, because there's no way I could get through that blocker. Well, a card like this would allow me to get through that blocker. So maybe this, you know, that Goblins deck maybe gets a slight upgrade having something like this Spark Mage's
right.
Gambit. I don't know. I'm warming up to the idea. All I know is it definitely was the salt shaker on my weekend.
And, you know, just from a couple of games that I played that I actually got it to work with my aggressive part of the games, it worked out well. Because, let's see, the last round that I was playing, I had the Slide Runner, the Predator, and three lands in my hand. And then I had Grip of the Royal and Devour in Flames. So, you know, the first turn I played a Mountain. Second was an Island and the Slide Runner. Third, I played another Island and attacked for three, you know, baiting out a removal spell, which they just took the three. And then after the attack, I played the Predator. The turn after that, I played the Grip of the Royal and Skyline Cascade, you know, so I tapped two of their creatures, making them not able to untap next turn. And then I swung for seven. So, you know, they took 10 damage in four turns without having any sort of backup. The next turn I had Devour in Flames and the Gambit, so I killed one of their creatures with the Devour in Flames, and then I swung for seven more, so really all it took was just, you know, overall, three more damage throughout the game that I needed to do to them.
Yeah, just a couple
so
of nudges.
Spark Mage's Gambit is going to be, it's going to be better in Limited than it will be in Standard, but I still think people will test it out in Standard against, I'd say, more control aspects than anything.
Well, keep in mind, this also gets flashback with the with the Goblin Dark Dwellers. So, I mean, it has a lot of utility. Like this, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm inclined to think maybe this could stick around. I started thinking about the Goblin deck here while we were talking, and the Goblin deck not only picks up
quite a few goblins.
Right, the Spark, but it also picks up like the Bushwhacker, which is a kind of card that exactly like they want to pick up, and the Free Runner to a lesser extent. I do like the Free Runner. I did use him quite a bit. Remington made quite a good use of him for a while. But, yeah, I don't know. I was just much more impressed with some of the slightly bigger cards. But, I don't know. A few other cards that I was really impressed with this weekend. Flaying Tendrils. Black, and a generic for a sorcery, Devoid. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. If a creature would die this turn, exile it instead. That card did quite a bit of work for my opponents. I never got to play one myself, but I think it's quite good. It'll probably see some constructed play. Look out for that. Okum Flame Seer. He is the red and two generic for the 3/2 human shaman ally that has cohort. And if you cohort, discard a card. If you do, draw a card. That guy did a lot of work for me, taking unloved lands and throwing them into the junk pile for more lands. Like I said, Captain's Claws did a lot of work for me. But then again, like I said, I had the heavy ally deck, basically both sealeds, or all three sealeds, really. So they did a lot of work. A card that really hurt me, actually, was Untamed Hunger. The Gentleman Hunter, who won both Saturday and Sunday's pre-releases, he was playing the super aggressive deck with like all the one drops, all the two drops, and then these kind of pump spells like Untamed Hunger and such. And he just really pushed the aggressive mechanic. And this was one of his, I think, cards that he leaned on the most. And it did a lot of work. So, speaking of that, how do you want to be playing in this format? Do you want to be playing the slow control deck? Do you want to be playing the high intense aggressive deck? What do you want to be doing?
Well,
you want to play the high synergy deck?
If I'm doing sealed, it's going to be based off of what I pull. Because I mean, you've seen me play Evil.
Sure. In the ideal, in the magical world where your pool is whatever deck that you want to be playing, what is it
aggro
that you want to be playing? You want to be the really low to the ground aggro deck, like what Hunter was playing? Something with all, you know, your curve tops out at four because you're, that's where your only, you know, like your one or two removal spells is, and everything else is one, twos, and three drops and pump spells.
Yeah, it's that, or like I'd really prefer to do that simply because it'll be, I like playing fast when it comes to limited events because everyone is basing, well, not everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, but the majority of people who play limited are basing it off of, hey, this is a slightly slower format.
Normally a
slower
format.
So I think it would be great to just be like, okay, no, you're playing a slow game. Here comes me playing 10 times faster than you. I hope you can deal with this.
Yeah, it, I don't know. I normally like playing the high synergy deck. I would tell you 9 times out of 10, I will do that. But I typically really enjoy outplaying my opponent and having these weird combinations on the board or in my hand or whatever really gives me an opportunity to stretch out my play skill and win the games that way. But after just seeing Hunter crush, like, I don't know if he, I don't think he dropped a match. I think the only person who was able to take more than a game or two off of him all weekend was Remington. And he was just on fire this weekend with, like I said, and he just kept playing the same kind of decks. Super low to the ground aggressive decks. And it just, it did the job for him. I was very impressed with his strategy. I'm curious where he, why he decided to go that route, but it was very, very effective,
because
I thought.
Because Hunter normally goes with, in sealed, or limited, I should say, he normally goes with evasive or aggro creatures.
I don't have everyone's particular playstyle memorized. I just felt that was very interesting to see that that's where he went and that's what took down the tournaments each day. It was very, it worked very well. Let's just say that. Let's see. Is there anything else in particular that really stood out to me? Remorseful punishment is a beating.
What's that?
Remorseless punishment. Black, and 3 for sorcery. It is a rare. Target opponent loses 5 life unless that player discards 2 cards or sacrifices a creature or planeswalker.
Oh,
repeat
right. Okay.
This process.
Yeah, I got that
once.
As my promo card, and I was just like, oh, this is great. And then I never used it.
Yeah, this card actually, I misread it the first time. I did not realize that I had the option to sacrifice a creature. So it tinned me the first time that I played it, or it got played against me. And then I think it fived me, and I sacrificed a creature the next time it was played against me. My opponent, Nathan, I know he's a listener of the show, he had 2 of them in the same deck. And it was very brutal. I said, the only chance I was going to have to win was the cards in my hand. I needed them for the strategy I was playing. And so when he played it, and I did not realize I had the opportunity to sacrifice my little token creatures, I just took 10, and I think I would have won had I taken 5 and sacrificed a creature. Or I definitely would have lived had I taken 0 and sacrificed 2 1-1s. But yeah, I just got in a position where I was at 3 life, and he had a 1-4 flyer. And I was able to do, like, 9 points of damage a turn, but his 3-1 flyer was able to outrace my 9 points of damage. So, I mean, it was just, it was what it was. I did end up winning that match, but not until after I realized that I could sacrifice 1/1 creatures to not take 10.
Yeah, what a magical world.
Yeah. So it did a lot of work. It was pretty sweet. And then I can't find it on the Gatherer, but there's an ally card. I think it makes like a 4/4 or a 5/5. Oh, here it is. I found it. It's an uncommon. It's called Malachar Soothsayer. It's a black and 4 for a 4/4 vampire shaman ally. And its cohort ability is Phyrexia Arena. You draw a card and you lose one life. That's its cohort ability. And this card did some serious work for my opponents. It really was doing some work to the point where I almost lost to this card.
Having the Phyrexian Arena, is, I mean, when you can have it just for, you know, your opponent's instep, you know, after you, or even after you block and, you know, your creature is going to die, that's still just a, oh, right. No, my dude's dead. Well, better draw a card. There's really no downside to
right,
that guy,
like,
other than taking 1 point of damage.
Yeah, it's a good attacker. I mean, for a 4/4 for 5 isn't the best, but it's not unreasonable. And tap this and tap a junker to draw a card, right. Lose a life is pretty great. I really didn't think allies were going to be a thing in Constructed, but I can definitely see us doing something with these weird allies in Constructed. This cohort ability has a lot of potential, I think, for the trollless nature of this podcast.
Yeah, I kind of assumed that they were going to be a good thing because, I mean, the last time they were in Standard, they were amazing.
Well, I mean, this time, though, I really, like, the rally triggers that they had out there were not the most impressive.
No, but they were still good.
Out there? They were fine. I wouldn't say they were good. I'd say they're fine. Like, the best one gives Indestructible, and that guy costs 5. But this casts the same thing and draws you a card. Like, this is way better. There's a white one. I think it's a 2/4 for 4, a white and 3, and it taps a creature. That card, I had 2 of those in my sealed on the day I did the best, and it did amazing work for me all weekend long. I don't know. I just really impressed with these cohort mechanic. Now, if you think about it, though, you are essentially tapping at least one creature, one relevant creature, probably 2 relevant creatures to do it. So it may not be so good, especially now that you have access to, like, all creatures get -2/-2. But it might still be good enough. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Well, there's...
Yeah, I don't know either. It'd be nice to see what other people... It's called the Spawn Binder.
Yeah, but there's other
the guy I'm thinking
allies.
Of.
There's another ally that bumps your team as well. So if you know, you have
sure.
a bunch of 2/2s and they're like, well, play this thing. And you go, okay, well, I'm just going to bump my team so they all live.
Right. Well, see, in two of my sealed pools had the white retreat. And both of those same pools also had that artifact that made the 1/1 guy. So I was able to make a lot of tokens, and I was able to do a lot of interesting tricks with it. Like, I almost always had the extra guy to tap down to, tap a creature or discard a card and draw a card. Or just, I actually had the guy who gave my guys indestructible when an ally came into play. I felt like he did a lot of work for me that weekend. So, there's a lot of raw potential there. I just didn't realize, I guess, when I was looking at some of the spoilers that we saw cohort, that there could have a real opportunity to do some work there.
For mine, I think the 2 cards that stood out the most were the Dimensional Infiltrator.
Which
it costs
is...
a blue and 1. It is a 2-1 devoid creature with flash and flying. And it has this nice ability where you pay a colorless and one, and target opponent exiles the top card of their library. If it's a land, you can return it to its dimensional infiltrator to its owner's hand. I use that so many times with chump blocking. And let's see, I think I used it 4 different times as a chump blocker and then exiled the top card, and it happened to be a land. So I just put it back in my hand. So I never lost a creature.
Well, that's convenient,
I mean, if it
doesn't
work.
Keep your opponent off of lands and keep your chump going.
I think I used it like 4 different times effectively, but there's other times where it obviously did die because you can't win all of them, right?
Well, you would not think so. Did you see Prophet of Distortion at all? I actually had one the first day where I was playing that primarily colorless Eldrazi deck. For those of you who don't know, it's a single blue for a 1/2 Eldrazi drone with the devoid for a colorless and 3 draw card. It actually did quite a bit of work. I bet you I probably drew 7 or 8 different cards, extra cards that pool. Yeah, thank you. I was trying to figure out what word I wanted to use there besides tournament again. But it probably drew me like 6 to 7, maybe even 8 cards over the course of the day. And it did win some games. It did lose some games. Like I said, I was having mana issues. I think there was even one turn against an opponent that would have, if I defeated my opponent, I would have had the same number of points as the eventual winner of the tournament, I think, which was Hunter, where I know I drew at least 2 cards, and I think I could have drawn a third card, and every card was a land. So, I do know for a fact that did happen to me at least once. It's not this particular creature's fault, but it would have been nice to draw some action spells off of him. I suppose if I didn't have him and I had to draw 5 cards or 3 rounds of lands in a row, I still would have lost. So it kind of helped me try to... gave me some hope that I was going to draw a not land sooner or later, even though it didn't come out. Overall, I think I like it. I think I am going to have to agree with you. In this format, we should be playing the aggressive deck. I don't think you can rely on having the late game kind of balmy stuff to take over the game and win. I think you just need to be attacking on turn 3 at the latest, possibly even attacking on turn 2, even if that attacking creature is just a 1/1 or a 1x, I think you want to be attacking
even if, as often
as possible.
You are attacking on turn 2 and they have a blocker. If you're building an aggressive deck, then you need to rely on you have more aggressive creatures. So offering up an early game chump, you know, trade is, it can be acceptable if your hand allows for it.
The other thing I think I've learned is the change to 4 packs of this set and 2 packs of the other set. I don't know if that's something that's going to stick around or if it's just something that is affecting this particular set, but it was definitely a much bigger effect, I think, than not. That one less pack of cards that I was familiar with definitely both added confusion on the construction side, as well as trying to figure out what were my best cards, right, for my pool. both of those things were definitely true. It would have been nice to have had that one extra pack of the previous set, in my opinion, just to kind of make it that much easier for my brain to put things together. That being said, I think all these cards were quite a bit of fun, and I think I'm definitely going to have to do a lot of practice drafts this week for the upcoming draft on Friday, because that will be whatever the name of this set is, Oath Battle. So it's definitely going to be a bit of a challenge getting the hang of this new format. It's definitely a whole new world.
Now, I know last week we talked about Warden of Geometries.
Mm-hmm. I still feel that that guy is quite good, but it may be too fast of a format for a card like that.
Hold on. I had some stuff in my throat.
Kamehameha. Yeah, Travis is pushing through.
Yeah, I'm just
being a little
kept
ill.
Putting myself on mute, my mic on mute, so I can clear my throat out and everything. So I did have Warden of Geometries in the deck, and the only time I ever attacked with it was when I had Gravity Negator in my hand, or on the field. And now, Gravity Negator with the Warden is just phenomenal. And I kind of think that...
Yeah, I really like the Gravity Negator.
The Negator is a really solid card for Limited, because with the way that the lands work and, you know, even the Warden. So I attack, you know, with both of them, and then with the Gravity's trigger on the stack, I tap the Warden to give it self-line.
Right. There was at least one game where I played my, I don't know, Eldrazi, my big Eldrazi generic creature from the previous set, and gave it flying with the Negator, and it just won the game. So yeah, I'm very impressed with the Negator. For those of you who don't know, and I'm just gonna go off memory, I think it is a 2/3, 2/4 flyer for 2/3 flyer for a blue and four, blue and three, and then you can pay a colorless to make an attacking creature gain flying till end of turn. It doesn't say your attacking creature, it just says
attacking
creature.
Another target creature. So you can give one of their creatures flying.
It has to be... Correct,
no, it
but it has to be attacking.
Then the Negator has to be attacking.
Sure? I think it has to be attacking.
The other creature doesn't have to be.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean. The Negator has to be attacking. So you can do some tricks with it and kind of make some interesting things happen, but a lot less than previous sets, I think. But still, there's a lot to it.
I want to ask you something about the draft, or for drafting. Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Which I haven't done yet, but hopefully
basing this off of the the Khan set. So, when you were drafting cons, now I don't know if you did this the same way I did.
Okay.
When I get a pack and I have cards that I don't think are going to be useful, I take a land. Is that something that you did?
Okay. Often,
because
I suppose.
I feel with this set, with the creature base, a lot of the devoid creatures needing a specific manaless color, or colorless mana, that picking up the lands that produce colorless will be an advantage, like grabbing the Unknown Shores, Crumbling Vistage, and Holdout Settlements, you know, things like that. I think that those should be, higher picks.
It is quite possible. My first guess is that there's enough of them floating around that you'll be able to get the three or four that you want, assuming that you pick them early enough. And I would say in the first, you know, 4 to 5 picks each pack, there'll probably be some. But if somebody out there is prioritizing them more, say like they get the Kozilek or some other giant thing that requires the waste mana or the colorless mana, like Walker the Waste or something like that,
right,
you're not going to see them. But there is enough floating around where I don't think you have to prioritize getting the colorless lands quite as high as you did in the cons. In the cons, I was a big five-color player in the cons, or at the very least, you know, a four-color, or the Morph guy. I won many tournaments being the Morph deck that other people just didn't take for whatever reason. And I do take lands highly. Whether or not I feel like they need to be taken that highly in this, I still haven't figured it out yet. Hopefully I'll be doing enough drafts, this simulated drafts this week, using like the beastga.org, that I'll at least have some vague idea of what strategies,
right,
I think will be good at the end of the day. But right now, I don't know. It's all up in the air. It could be anything. Is that questionable enough for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty
I just
much
don't
how,
know.
I was, how I was coming to that conclusion, because I would like to.
I really
assume,
think,
but, you know, I just can't right now.
I just can't. Like right now, I think what I'm probably going to do is draft black cards first. Specifically anything that is black allies related. I definitely think that there are some really good black-blue synergies going on with cards like Sweep Away, Umara Entangler, the 2/4 ally that taps with Converge to drain 2 life. And he's a 4/2, I believe. Vampire Envoy, a 1/4 flyer that when he taps, you gain a life. I think these are going to be staples of things to come. I really like Unnatural Endurance also. We kind of talked about it, I think, last week. For a black, target creature gets +2/+0 and regenerates. I think that's really good. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm too worried about, at this time, hunting down the different mana. I really think for me it's going to be more, I'm just going to draft black cards and see where I end up in the first pack. That's just my gut. That being said, I could get an early, you know, one of the gold cards and be convinced to do something different, but it is so unlikely. Or, you know, like I said, I'd have to get something that's just an amazing bomb that requires colorless, I think, for me to make it switch over. So, but yeah, unlike cons, where I would even play off-color lands in the cons deck just so I can make people think, oh man, what kind of morph does he have down there? He's playing all these colors. It could be any of the morphs. And I could make weird attacks or weird blocks, you know, depending on what lands I had available, where this is a different kind of situation. So, yeah, I don't think that I let them go around, or I don't think I snag them up unless I have a reason
right
to get them. But I don't know. That's just me. All right, well, let's... I know we're starting to get a little long again, but I want to just touch on...
Okay.
The modern thing, right? We actually have a lot of really bad salt with the modern ban list that just came out. Primarily Splinter Twin. People really, at least here in my local area, are really upset that the Splinter Twin got taken out. Most people don't seem to be nearly as upset of the Summer Bloom getting taken out, but they're really upset over that. They feel like just because it was the most played deck, it wasn't such a large percentage of the field that they needed to cut it down. But you are talking about 15 to 20% of any metagame, right? And you are talking about one of the most consistent Pro Tour decks since the banning of
Birthing Pod.
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, I read a really interesting article, and I posted this up in, I think, our Salina player group, that Olive actually posted on MTG Goldfish. And he had a line in there that I think really stuck out at me. And it was, because we demanded a modern Pro Tour, Wizards is going to shake up the format before every single modern Pro Tour. Get used to the idea. Essentially, that's not exactly what he said. That's me paraphrasing it. I just want to, if you're outraged, be outraged at me, not at him. But I don't know. What do you think of that? Do you think that that should be the case, that they should take a they should mix up the modern format? Because
yeah.
I think they
okay.
should.
So modern is a semi-eternal format right now. And I say semi-eternal, obviously, because it doesn't go all the way back, but it goes back far enough to where we have enough sets where you can do literally anything from 8th edition forward. And do...
Correct. It is an eternal format in the sense that it doesn't change that much.
Right, that's why I said
nothing rotates out, but it...
So...
Right. Sure.
I feel, in my opinion, as to why they banned Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom, I feel they're both good bans, and it's not because either one of them is stupid overpowered, but it's more because of how they affect the meta. You know, Splinter Twin is obviously, you know, you have to have one of, like, three other cards already on the field in order for that card to win. But with the way that that deck, you know, those particular decks play, you're going to win no matter what on that turn. So that's why I feel banning that card was a good thing. Because if you didn't have an answer for it, then you're just done. And then the reason that I feel they banned Summer Bloom, again, this is just my opinion, it's because it didn't let your opponent play the game. And...
Well, they are very clear that... And Wizards, if you read the Wizards, why we banned X and Y, Wizards is very clear that they do not want turn four combos in Modern to be consistent enough or being seen often enough that people feel like there is nothing to be done there. And, yeah, it's a turn one kill is not very common. A turn two is not super common, but it's, you know, relatively high in that sense that you could do it. And three and four, it's,
right.
It becomes quite likely in the percentage
right.
of the decks that were getting played. Now, that being said, it is an extremely skill and intensive deck. It's one of the reasons that I personally have never liked it as a deck. I just feel like it's too easy to get yourself worn out by the end of the long tournament. But there are a lot of people out there that had the mental stamina to play a deck like that, and I don't have a problem, but I do have a problem with turn three or earlier infinite combos, essentially, or instant wins in a format where they say we don't want a turn four, you know, we don't want a turn four deck out there. If they're going to continue to cut turn four, if they weren't going to do something to that deck this go around, I would have been upset because they've reduced the other turn four decks in the format. You would think that they would do the same thing. And it's kind of a similar mindset with Splinter Twin. It's not usually a turn four deck.
Right.
But it can be. You know, there's a lot of times where you just, like, play your, you know, whichever one of the guys on turn three, as a test, does it stick, does it not? And then you draw a second copy of Splinter Twin, and you're just like,
yeah, pretty much.
Well, do I win? And if they kill it, you're like, all right, well, we'll continue playing Magic. But otherwise, you just, oh, I do? Thanks. And then we just go to the next game, you know? And it was too large of the format.
Yeah.
It was just too much. And that deck doesn't change that much with it by switching Kiki
Jiki just slows it down
for Splinter Twin. It just slows it down, like you said, like one turn. But most of the time, the way they play that deck anyway, like 60% of the time, it's going to be a slow control deck, and then they'll combo off to win at the end. So that 60% of the time, it doesn't matter if it's Kiki Jiki or Splinter Twin. It does the same amount of work. It only hurts that 40% of the time where you just go for it on turn four and get there. You know? Or I shouldn't even say you get there. It's just that 40% of the time you just go for it, and then, you know, half the time you get there and half the time you don't. To me, that's fine. You could cut that part of the deck out, and the deck is still quite good, and it'll still probably make top eights and whatnot. I don't think it's a problem. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would play Splinter Twin before the banning. I certainly won't play it now after the banning. I don't think I would have played Titan Bloom before the banning, and I certainly won't play it now after the banning. Those are two decks that I just don't feel are right for the format. I would rather play some sort of Mardu deck or maybe even just Burn. You know what? Actually, let's talk about that super, super quick. This is the last real topic here in the little modern section. Today's, last night, however your world works, MTG Goldfish article really that came out was about a budget Burn deck in Modern. And it looked quite a bit of fun, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I mentioned that I didn't play anything today on the stream because this is kind of like the dead, you know, what do they call it, the lame duck presidency. This is like the lame duck standard format where it doesn't do you a lot of good to do anything. But he was playing this, and I did really enjoy it. I am interested in putting together something in Modern that's kind of budgety. What do you think, Travis? Should I put together something for Modern that's kind of budgety that I can just play during these lame duck periods? And if I do, should I do something like this Burn deck? Like, this is something that I could theoretically play any time in Modern, not just during the lame
decks. Currently on, you know, my Magic Online, most of my decks are Modern, and they're all budget. So I think that having just the ability to play something while you don't want to play a standard deck is a good thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just kind of looking at some of these, right? Now, granted, he did Burn today and Mono Black last week, which I didn't really care for. There's a Mono Green Aggro that seems kind of so-so. Troll Worship, which I think is probably quite good. But actually, I go back to that deck that a listener sent us that was... what am I thinking? It's the Restore Balance deck, which I kind of like. So, I don't know. I'm not sure what I should do. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of Modern in general. I like a rotating format. I don't like things that get stale for very long, in my opinion. I wasn't done with this last standard, but it's already gone, essentially, in my subconscious. It's just dead. So, I don't know. I'm not sure what I should do. I wish you had more of an answer.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying. All right, man. Well, let's play a game. I continue to like the flavor text game. I feel like it's the easiest to do. But okay. We could do a Would You Rather, or we could do something else. What do you want to do? Okay. Do you want to come up with something on the fly for Would You Rather? Do you want me to come up with something on the fly?
I'm on drugs right now.
Okay. Well, I think we should start with something with remorseless punishment. Because I feel like this card is full of bad decisions waiting to happen. So, let's say you have a creature that you're going to use to win the game next turn. You have a planeswalker that you are going to use to pump the creature to win the game next turn. You have a card in your hand that you need to use to get the blocker out of the way to win next turn, and you're at 9 life. Tell me what you do as I cast Remorseless Punishment at you, Travis.
What is my planeswalker?
I don't know. Some planeswalker that's going to get a sword, and that's going to give +0/+1 till end of turn, and I'm at 4 life. And it's a 3/3 creature. But I have an 0/4 flying wall, and the spell in your hand makes my creature unable to block. You can't win without any... You have to have all three of these pieces to win this next turn. And I cast Remorseless Punishment on you.
In that case, I just discard my hand and, you know, hope to top deck something. Because if all else... I mean, I'm going to keep Sorin alive because he can make me another creature. So I can just hope to...
Now realize, you can't choose to discard two cards unless you have at least two cards in your hand.
And I only have the one card in my hand? Okay, so
let's say you have two cards.
Discard two cards, and I would lose 5 life. Because at the very worst, I can still gain... And you said that my creature is at least 3 power since you're at 4 life, and you said I was going to win next turn. So at the very least, instead of being at 9 next turn, I'll be at 8.
Let's also throw in that you've scryed 2, and you know that the top of your deck is for whatever reason, nothing. Or maybe not so much scryed as you did some sort of like peak effect where you rearranged them. So you know the top two draws of your deck are not going
to
get there.
I mean, I'm still going to have to... Yeah,
you still have
to
eventually draw something? I gotcha. What if I also have a 4-power flyer?
See, now you're just throwing extra in there.
That's the whole idea. That's the pain.
Well,
this thing,
I was basing my judgment off of things that were already established. You can't just be like... Okay, you have this.
Also,
and
I quicken this at the end of your turn.
And you have these two things in your hand, and I have this one thing. And then I make my decision, and you're like, oh, also now I have this other bomb thing. Well, see, you can't do that.
That's right. I'm hosing you. I'm lining this up against you, Travis.
Well,
I want to see my
judgment based off of the things that were already established on the field at the time. Yeah, so that was just cheating.
That's true. Well, I'm full of cheats. Maybe I dropped it on the table and it's a flying haste creature.
What standard has flying and haste? Nope, the Firebird.
I don't know, but
that's a 3/3.
Let's pretend. There you go. Okay, well maybe you're at 8 life instead of... Maybe we have a life total discrepancy.
Well, then I would have gone to that before I... So in that scenario,
it's all,
what's my creature?
I don't know, some generic 3/3.
But it was
That's
flying.
Black and or white.
So then
it
why did
flying.
Your 0/4 flying ball have any sort of effect on what my creature did?
So you couldn't make a 2/2
flyer that would attack in 2 turns.
make a 2-2 flyer that could 2-2 kill me. Yeah, you needed, your back was against the wall. You had to win next turn or lose.
I would.
I guess that's not true. If you have a sword and you pumped in the wall block,
right?
Then, you could gain 4 life and you wouldn't lose to the flyer.
That's because your Firebird has to attack, so you would not be able to block with it.
Well, it's in my hand. I dropped it on the table to try to get you to scoop. I accidentally dropped it on the table. So, I could play it second main.
So, either way, I think...
It's okay,
no,
Travis.
I'm
it was. It was a. I hear the smoke. I hear the smoke from here.
I'd probably get rid of the creature and discard the 2 cards. No, I'd lose 5 life and discard the 2 cards. Yeah, I'm sticking with that. Because
sounds solid.
Either way, if you. The way I look at it is, if you use that thing to bluff me out and it didn't work, then... And you already said I was at 9 life. Then I would still be at 4 when I lost the 5, so it would put me down to 1. And the next turn I'd be at... I'd kill you next turn.
Well, my wall
just
discarded
keeps blocking. Cards.
It was an
06,
like, flying ball.
So, yeah, then I would be at 5, and then you drop me down to 2, and then I'd go back up to 6. So your bird would really be at a disadvantage as long as you didn't kill my one creature. And then hopefully, you know, 2 turns after I already knew that garbage was coming... You know, in 3 turns, then I wouldn't be able to win.
There you go. There you have it, kids. Travis, taking my no-win scenario and punching me in the throat with it.
This was really your fault.
Alright, guys. Well, I think it really was my fault. That should have been the title. That'll be the subtitle. It really is my fault. Anyway, thank you for joining us, Travis. Of course, I'm Samus Garobo. You can follow me on Twitter at Samus Garobo. He's Travis. You can follow him at TurtlePower319 on Twitter. Which, I did not see a tweet from you this last week.
Oh, pretty sure I retweeted something. Does that count?
pretty sure.
Well, crap.
No, it doesn't count. But we'll take it. Of course, you can also check out this and all past episodes at SamusGarobo.com. Or you can check them out over at iTunes if you jump over there. I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review. Speaking of things that you could also do, you could send us an email at the number 2trollsbrew@gmail.com. If you have a subject or a deck you'd like to take a look at, that is the easiest and best way to do so. I don't know, Travis. I think I'm good, ready to say troll on. How about you, my friend? All right, guys. Troll on, everybody. And cue the music.